To hear argument. You're obviously ready to proceed.
May it please the court, Arthur Connolly on behalf of appellees. I would like to introduce my co-counsel to the court, Peter Kahn of Williams and Connolly and Ed Reddington of Williams and Connolly. Mr. Reddington will be making argument this morning on behalf of appellees.
Hey, welcome to the court. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. Joelle Pileski of Smith, Katzenstein & Furlow on behalf of the appellant, Jagan Reddy. I have at council table my partner, Kathleen Miller, and Mr. Reddy is sitting behind me. We are here before the court on appeal from the Court of Chancery's decision granting the plaintiffs and third-party defendants summary judgment. The court concluded that Mr. Reddy's cancellation of BVI's ownership interest and issuance of new share certificates was ineffective because he did not amend the charters of Inc. and 2 Inc. pursuant to Section 242 of the Corporate Code. It is our position that the court erred. Cancellation of share certificates does not require a Section 242 amendment because it neither changes the stock nor alters the rights that attach to that stock.
How do you respond to the argument that not until this appeal was there any reference to cancellation of stock certificates as opposed to cancellation of the stock itself or to the ownership rights therein?
I believe because it was never an issue that was considered below in the sense that it was never a consideration that Mr. Reddy had canceled stock of the company, that the parties understood that this was pursuant to the 1996 agreement, transfer of ownership.
Let me refocus my question. You're contending that the vice chancellor erred as a matter of law, essentially in confusing, one process with another. That is, on the one hand, the process of extinguishing rights in stock or even extinguishing a class of stock itself, and on the other hand, the mechanic of simply transferring rights in stock without affecting the stock itself from one person to the other. You argued that that was an error of law, yet the error of law that you attribute to the court was never presented to the court in any straightforward way. Isn't that correct?
I'm sorry, in any what way?
Straightforward way.
No, it was not. It was never raised below by either of the parties, and nor was it raised by the court below. The first time that it was raised was in the court's opinion. Have I answered Your Honor's question?
Yes.
We also believe that the court erred because the transfer of ownership pursuant to the 1996 agreement did not require 242 amendment because it neither changed the stock nor altered the rights that attached to that stock. What occurred here was, in fact, a cancellation of share certificates and reissuance of new share certificates affecting a transfer of ownership, and that transaction did not require a 242 amendment.
Now, where would we find that in the record?
Where would we find that this constituted a transfer?
No, those operative facts, that there's a certificate in existence, this certificate's canceled, and a new certificate's issued. That seems to be in dispute, that those facts actually happened.
I actually do not believe that it's in dispute that that's what occurred. There are, in fact, the share certificates are in the record.
Okay.
And I believe they were attached to the briefs on appeal. Mr. Reddy testified that what occurred on August 23rd, 2005, was that he canceled those share certificates, and there are share certificates with his handwritten notations written, canceled across the front of them, and there are new certificates that were reissued to the transferees, to Mr. Reddy and to Mr. Bin Mahfouz, that represented that transfer.
And your argument is that that was an authorized transaction, that is, a transaction authorized by the persons who held ownership rights in the stock represented by the original certificates?
Yes. BVI was the entity that held the shares in Inc. and 2 Inc., and BVI was party to the 1996 agreement, which is the contract pursuant to which it agreed to transfer its ownership to it, that is, BVI's own shareholders.
Following Justice Holland's question, what in the record supports the contention that BVI agreed to this transfer?
It was an oral agreement that Mr. Reddy testified to. There is no record evidence to the contrary saying that the oral agreement did not exist. And the keeping in mind that we are, in fact, on summary judgment, whether one considers Mr. Barma as the beneficial owner of BVI or as the person who had total discretion to take action on behalf of BVI, Mr. Barma authorized BVI to enter into this agreement with Inc. and 2 Inc.
According to Mr. Reddy?
Yes.
There's no testimony, obviously, on by Mr. Barma.
No, Mr. Barma is no longer alive.
Right. Well, the parties seem to cross paths in the briefs. And the way I read what's going on here, the vice chancellor concluded, as a matter of law, you needed to amend the certificate. Having said that, at the end of the opinion, the vice chancellor said, if you have rights under the 1996 agreement, you can pursue them separately. Is that your understanding also?
That is my reading of the opinion as well, yes.
However, your contention is that the 1996 agreement gave authority to cancel the shares, and that if the 1996 agreement was operative, everything that happened here happened in due course, and you didn't need a charter amendment to bring it about.
That is correct, and I think that in responding to that question, it's important to remember where we are procedurally, which is at summary judgment, and that the Court of Chancery, we believe properly, assume for purposes of summary judgment that 1996 agreement exists. If the court had assumed otherwise, summary judgment would not have been appropriate because there would have been a disputed issue of a very material fact.
Right. So that's where I'm saying the parties seem to pass each other, because I got that from the briefs. If we assume the 1996 agreement existed, then the legal question, as you frame it, is did you need a charter amendment to implement it, or could you simply cancel some shares and reissue some other shares? Is that correct? But it's all predicated on assuming for purposes of summary judgment that the 1996 agreement existed.
Yes, because it was pursuant to that 1996 agreement that this transaction, the transfer, occurred. That was the intent of BVI was to allow for this transfer to occur upon the contingency that
arose. And the triggering event was having an American citizen involved.
Yes.
Ms. Pileski, is it fair to say that the Vice Chancellor's opinion could be read oppositely from the way the last interchange suggests, that is, that the agreement is invalid, and under those circumstances, there was no basis, no power at all that exists for the actions that took place in 2005?
I don't believe it is, because the Vice Chancellor in the opinion stated specifically that for the purposes of summary judgment, he was assuming that the agreements existed as Mr. Reddy testified.
He did assume that the agreements existed,
yes.
But if I can refer you to page 20 of the opinion, of the slip opinion. Third line from the bottom of the page. The opinion says here, and I'm quoting, the oral agreement between Barma and Reddy regarding the share issuances as affected by Reddy in August 2005 contemplated a legally voidable act. Reddy's actions based on that oral agreement resulted in an unenforceable agreement. The alleged oral agreement, and I assume that refers to the 1996 agreement,
yes,
amounts to a legally voidable act.
I understood that to sum up what the Court of Chancery was concluding, which was that that the oral agreement required a 242 amendment, and therein lies the basis of our appeal, which is we believe that was in fact an error, that the oral agreement affected a cancellation of share certificates and a transfer of ownership, and that those actions do not require a 242 amendment. Plaintiffs don't dispute that Section 242 is not required plaintiffs don't dispute that an amendment pursuant to 242 is not required when share certificates are canceled. That does not appear to be at issue here. Instead, they argue that when the 1996 agreement was affected, that there was a change in the stock or the rights of the stock that required an amendment. We do not believe that that is correct. The only thing that occurred that changed here was the ownership of the stock of BVI. Changing ownership does not change stock. There was no stock that was canceled. Only the stock certificates were canceled. The underlying stock still existed. The rights that attached to that stock similarly were not altered. Who could exercise those rights is what changed. And 242 does not require an amendment to recognize a change in the ownership of who can exercise rights that attach to stock.
So your position is that under the 1996 agreement, the terms of the agreement were that if an American citizen becomes involved, the entity agreed to the cancellation of its shares. Is that correct?
Yes, that if an American citizen came to hold stock in BVI for tax purposes, BVI would distribute its ownership or transfer its ownership to its own shareholders. So they would become the direct shareholders in the two subsidiary entities, Inc. and 2, Inc.
If we were to conclude, contrary to your side's position, that the 1996 agreement was void, then would it be correct that the only way that actions by Mr. Reddy in 2005 could be upheld would be as a result of a Section 242 amendment? That is, would the Vice Chancellor's opinion be correct based on the assumption that the 1996 agreement either didn't exist or if it did, it was void?
I'm hesitating because Mr. Reddy's actions did not cancel the stock, and because he didn't cancel the stock, there was not a 242 amendment requirement. What he did was he transferred the ownership of that stock. So I apologize, Your Honor, I don't want to interrupt you. If he'd had authority through some other means other than the 1996 agreement, assuming that there was some other reason for the transfer of that ownership interest, again, I do not believe that a 242 amendment would have been required because what he did was canceled the share certificates and issued new certificates affecting a transfer of ownership.
So you're saying, if I understand you correctly, that even based on the assumption that the 1996 agreement was void, the only way that Mr. Reddy's acts could be validated is if there were some other source of authority for him to take the actions that he did.
Well,
apart from 242, a 242 amendment.
Well, I don't think, again, that a 242 amendment would apply because I think that there wasn't a cancellation of stock. And I think I would, if I understand your question properly, I would have to agree with what I believe would be the underlying premise is that a director of a corporation can't just go and transfer ownership without some basis for that transfer. Certainly a shareholder whose ownership was transferred would have some recourse for having its ownership transferred without some underlying basis. What I think differentiates this case, and again it would ignore your hypothetical though, is that we have the 1996 agreement pursuant to which BVI consented and expressed its intent for that transfer to occur.
Right. The question I think that we face is what the effect of that 1996 agreement is and what the lower court held was the effect of that agreement.
Right. And we believe that it was an error that the court held that a 242 amendment was required because there was, in fact, no stock canceled.
Let me ask you my earlier question from a slightly different perspective. Your position, as I understand it, is BVI agreed in 1996 that if the triggering event occurred, its shares could be canceled. And what happened in this case is Mr. Reddy said the event occurred, the shares should be canceled, and pursuant to the agreement, reissued to someone else. And it was just a matter of course, as if I said to anyone, I own stock. If a triggering event occurs, cancel my shares, give them to someone else, and that corporations do that all the time, and you can do that without amending your charter.
Well, I think I need to qualify a little bit your question, because it wasn't simply that the 1996 agreement was, if this contingency occurred, cancel the shares. It was that if this contingency occurred, the owners of BVI stock were to become the direct owners. I'm sorry. The owners of BVI stock would become the direct holders of BVI's interest in Inc. and TUIG. In order to effectuate that process, it required cancellation of BVI's interest and reissuance of those shares to BVI shareholders.
Well, I understand, but it's analogous to saying, I own shares. When my child becomes 21, I want my ownership interest to go to my child.
Yes.
And that if we use my hypothetical that I agree that when my child becomes 21, my shares will go to my child, that's something that a corporation would do routinely without amending its charter.
Yes, I agree. Corporations do not amend their charters when ownership of shares is transferred.
So that's the analogy you would make to what happened here.
Yes, and I would add to that that I'm not even sure what amendment a corporation would make to its charter under that circumstance. 242 says amendments as necessary. I don't know what amendment a corporation could possibly make to its charter to reflect a transfer of ownership, not even getting into the implications of if every time share ownership were changed, corporations had to amend their charters. It would be, I think, something short of a paper nightmare for corporations.
Well, we're using up all your time. You have about 3.5 minutes left. Would you like to save that?
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Ed Reddington, and with Peter Kahn and Arthur Connolly, I represent the appellees in this matter. On August 23, 2005, the defendant, who was the sitting director and officer of the Delaware and British Virgin Island corporations that are parties to this case, took unilateral action whereby he canceled the Delaware shares held by the British Virgin Islands Corporation and reissued those shares to himself and to a third party who was unaware of and not a participant in the defendant's activities. The defendant claims he just woke up one morning in the privacy of his home in Summit, New Jersey, and decided to take this action. After taking this alleged action, the defendant affirmatively concealed his actions from all of the other interested parties, including the officers and directors of the corporate entity that he is now claiming is a transferor under his actions, and the party who he is now claiming was the transferee in this alleged transaction. Now, the defendant claims that his authority...
The transferor you refer to as BVI.
Correct, Your Honor. That would be MBKS Company Limited, sometimes referred to as BVI for short.
Okay.
The transferee would be Sultan bin Mahfouz. Now, the defendant claims that his authority for this action is the existence of a 1996 oral agreement between the corporate parties. Now, we do assume for purposes of summary judgment that it exists, but it's worth noting that no one other than the defendant, there's no evidence that anyone other than the defendant has ever heard of this agreement, although the defendant claims that a man who is now deceased also knew of this agreement. And there is not a shred of written documentation other than the self-serving documentation that the defendant himself created on August 23, 2005.
Well, that may add color to your position, but if we're to give those comments any force, they undermine the basis for summary judgment, don't they? I mean, aren't you actually challenging whether, in fact, there was a 1996 agreement?
We're assuming there is an agreement, Your Honor.
All right. Well, let's move on from that assumption.
Yes, sir. Until this appeal, when asked to describe the actions he took pursuant to this agreement, the defendant has always characterized his acts as a cancellation of BVI's shares or ownership interest, followed by a reissuance of shares to himself in Sultan Bin Mahfouz. He has never, until the filing in this court of his opening brief, described his activities as a mere transfer of share certificates.
All right, well, let's go back to my hypothetical, and you tell me how you would characterize it. In my hypothetical, I say, I own stock. When my child becomes 21, transfer my stock to my child. What happens to my shares according to you?
They're transferred, Your Honor. That is very different from what took place here, because what took place here was no action by the actual party who should be a transfer, BVI. There was only action by the defendant, who was not the record holder of these shares, acting through the issuing corporations, who was not the record holder of these shares. And the action that he says he took and has repeatedly said he took was not a transfer, it was a cancellation. Now, if we look at the documentation and the admissions in this case, it's clear. There's no dispute. What he did was a cancellation of shares and ownership interest, not a transfer of share certificates.
Let me just mechanically, are you telling us that, at least according to the way the other side characterized the transaction, there was a cancellation of all the shares that were owned by BVI and then an issuance of new treasury shares, the same number, to the BVI shareholders?
Your Honor, the action that Mr. Reddy has always said he took was a cancellation of BVI shares. Now, BVI happened to be the only shareholder, and they owned all of the shares that were issued and outstanding. So I would say that is what took place, your hypothetical. Now, in the corporate resolution that he drafted to affect his action, he takes the action through the issuing corporations. NBKS Company Limited isn't at the top of this resolution. Inc. and 2 Inc. are. And in this resolution, he states that he, Jagan Reddy, not the issuing corporations, not the transferring corporation, not BVI, he has now decided, present tense, to own the shares in BVI directly. The defendant then states in this same resolution that the shares, not the share certificates, held by NBKS Company Limited, would be reissued, not transferred. Never uses the word transfer. In other words, the corporate resolutions, the documents that the defendant himself drafted and executed and upon which he relies to justify his actions, are consistent with a cancellation, not a transfer. They come from the issuing corporations through the acts of the defendant unilaterally, and they talk only about shares, not share certificates, and they make no mention of transfer.
Well, but let's go back to the summary judgment posture, where we assume for purposes of summary judgment, the 1996 agreement existed. If it existed and it's to be given effect, there seems to be a focus here on the manner in which it was given effect, because if we assume it existed and we assume it could have been accomplished by a transfer, does the whole case turn on the language that was used to consummate an agreement that we assume was there? Because if that's the case, where are we if they simply transfer the shares? We haven't really accomplished much if we're going to assume the 1996 agreement was operative.
Your Honor, 2 points with that. First of all, I think the manner, we do assume that this agreement exists, and therefore the manner in which the agreement is executed is extremely important. And what the undisputed facts of record show is that he did not affect that agreement by a transfer. He affected it by a cancellation. Secondly, if it were to be a transfer, as we argued in the second part of our brief, that transfer should be viewed as ineffective as a matter of law. First of all, the right party didn't do it. The transfer didn't do it. Mr. Reddy and the issuing corporations did. Second of all, there was no delivery of the share certificates. There was no endorsement of the share certificates.
Well, you say there was no delivery. That goes back to my earlier question about whether we have record evidence that shares were physically canceled and new shares were physically issued. You're saying, do you agree they were issued but not delivered, or are you saying they were never issued?
Your Honor, what the record evidence establishes is that Mr. Reddy canceled them, and then after canceling them, he got new certificates. And he took the old certificates and he lined through them and he wrote canceled. He never signed the back of those certificates. He never did a proper transfer on the books and records. He didn't show that to the old shareholder and say, hey, look, I'm transferring this. He then got new certificates out. He wrote new names on those certificates, and I don't know what he did with them at that point. I guess he filed them in a desk drawer at home. But he certainly never took those to Sultan bin Mahfouz, who's supposed to be the transferee, and say, here's your new certificate.
So the mechanics to effectuate a legally valid transfer of share ownership did not occur here, at least the record so reflects.
That's correct, Your Honor. And, well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So if we were to credit that argument, we're still dealing with a matter, or at least a set of issues that the lower court, the Vice Chancellor, did not address, correct?
I think as a matter of law, the case posture would remain the same, which is that if the transfer was invalid, if it was ineffective as a matter of law, then the shareholders are in the same position that they were in prior to Mr. Reddy's actions, which is in effect what the Chancery Court found.
Well, you used the word transfer in your sentence, and following up on Justice Jacobs' question, it appears your argument comes down to this. We assume for purposes of summary judgment that there was an agreement in 1996, and you might have been able to legally effectuate the agreement through a properly conducted transfer. However, you've chosen to try to consummate the agreement in a manner that's not permitted under Delaware law without a charter amendment. Is that correct?
I think that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Just to follow up on that question, if, let's assume, a charter amendment was required to validate the actions that Mr. Reddy took in 2005, how would that amendment work in the real world? What would be amended, and what would the amendment be?
Well, I think that the amendment would be like canceling any stock. I mean, essentially that's what we say he did here, is that there was nothing in the stock certificate, there was nothing in the charter of the corporation that allowed a sitting director to just unilaterally take action and cancel the ownership interests of that corporation's stockholders.
Well, we're talking about normally, when one thinks of a charter amendment to cancel stock, it's in terms of canceling an entire class or series of shares. Here we're talking about canceling just a portion of a class of stock owned by one shareholder. Now, that can be done contractually. It can be done perhaps by redemption if there are redemption rights. Neither of those scenarios is applicable. How does that operate through a Section 242 charter amendment?
Well, Your Honor, honestly, I think here it would operate very similar, because BVI is it owned all of the outstanding and issued shares. So while this is a very unique situation under the facts of this case, and I don't think in most corporations you would see something like this happen, what we would say is it's the functional equivalent of canceling stock under this typical scenario.
Well, wouldn't it require, in effect it would be an expropriation, would it not, of one shareholder's ownership interest, unless there's 100% agreement, that is agreement by 100% of the shareholders?
I think that's right, Your Honor. Here, of course, since BVI was the 100% owner, if they had effected an amendment, BVI would have had to have approved it.
So BVI's consent would be required, whether that consent take the form of a transfer without a change in the capital structure, or a change in the capital partial change in the capital structure.
Yes, sir. I think that's correct.
What's your understanding of the consideration for the 1996 agreement?
Your Honor, I don't believe there is any consideration. I think there are legal base. There would be legal bases to find that this agreement was invalid as a matter of law. That is not what we did for purposes of summary judgment. We assumed its existence. However, there is no indication that any consideration flowed to the contracting parties or the agreement parties, the two corporations from this alleged agreement. The agreement completely lacks definiteness. I mean, its terms are completely arbitrary and subject to the whims of whatever the defendant says they are at any particular time. Mr. Reddy has admitted that he did not seek negotiating authority from the corporation he was representing before he entered this agreement, and Mr. Reddy has admitted that he was an interested director standing on both sides of this transaction when he concluded the agreement. So I think there are, and I should also say Mr. Reddy has admitted that notwithstanding that he was a director of BVI and Mr. Barma was not a director of BVI, Mr. Reddy allowed Mr. Barma, the one who wasn't the director of BVI, to completely control the negotiations when they concluded this alleged agreement. So I think there are ample grounds to find, as a matter of law, this agreement is unenforceable.
Counsel, let me ask you the same question that I asked Ms. Pulaski there on page 20, going over to 21 of the slip opinion. Mm-hmm. The Vice Chancellor concludes that the 1996 agreement was void. What do you understand that language to mean?
Your Honor, I had not focused on that language specifically until you raised it a few minutes ago. My original understanding would be that he was focusing on the action that Mr. Reddy took on August 23rd, 2005 to cancel stock or cancel shares. However, I think that language is broad enough to cover other arguments that this agreement could be void as a matter of law on other grounds, such as we just discussed.
Other arguments that were not specifically raised?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, if that's the case, then how do we address that on this appeal?
Well, Your Honor, I think the record is set where it is, and this is a de novo review of the record, and so I think it could be addressed as a matter of law on appeal, should this court want to entertain that.
Perhaps I'm addressing the same question from a different perspective. Assuming this court were to affirm the decision of the trial court, what is the next step in this litigation? It's only partial summary judgment, correct?
Your Honor, I think the next step in this litigation would potentially be up to the defendant. I think it's that an affirmance, this is not a partial summary judgment. This is a complete summary judgment unless the defendant seeks to bring a new cause of action under these so-called 1996 oral agreement.
It's a Section 225 case, this action.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. Yes.
And that's why you're arguing it's a complete summary judgment.
Yes, Your Honor, yes. I would like to just briefly touch on some of the other areas in the record that I think conclusively establish that what took place here was a cancellation. First of all, with regard to the defendant's answer and counterclaim, his pleading, he admits in this pleading that he acted through the issuing corporations, not the record owner of the shares, and he states in there that he canceled, not transferred, canceled the record owner's ownership interest or shares. He makes this admission 12 times in his pleading, in paragraphs 3, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 26, 31, and 32 of his answer, and in paragraphs 12, 24, and 33 of his counterclaim. Additionally, in his counterclaim, when describing what happened to BVI shares, he doesn't say BVI transferred his shares. In paragraphs 40 and 46 of his counterclaim, he says BVI lost its shares. Never once does he state that BVI transferred its shares or consented to the transfer of its shareholding in this pleading. He should be held to that admission. His interrogatory responses are the same. He repeatedly refers to canceling BVI's ownership interest in Inc. or 2 Inc. or canceling their shares. He never refers to transferring BVI's stock at the direction or consent of BVI. He makes this admission 5 times in various responses to his interrogatories. At his deposition, when he talks about what he did with BVI shares, first of all, he admits in his deposition that the 1996 oral agreement was not self-executing. It didn't just happen upon the happening of an event. An action had to be taken. And in fact, in one part of his deposition, Mr. Reddy asserts that BVI could not transfer its shares, that it didn't have the legal authority to transfer its shares. He makes this admission on page 103 of his deposition, lines 12 through 21. Yet now he would come into this court and ask this court to believe that that's what he meant all along. Even though he said in his deposition they couldn't transfer shares, he meant all along that they did transfer shares.
And what's the basis for that assertion that they could not transfer their shares?
Your Honor, I would read the deposition. He was saying that since BVI was not the equitable owner, in his opinion, that it it had no authority to transfer shares, which, of course, I think is incorrect as a matter of law. Even a legal holder does have the right to transfer shares. But his assertion at deposition was they had no authority to transfer shares. Yet now he wants to argue that that's what he was accomplishing for BVI on August 23rd, 2005, even though he had never argued that before, and all of his other assertions were that he canceled shares.
Does the record reflect whether Mr. Redding has any training in the law?
I don't know if that's addressed specifically, Your Honor, in the record. I don't believe he's a lawyer, if that's your question.
You seem to be putting a lot of emphasis on his choice of words.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not putting an emphasis on his choice of words as a legal effect. I mean, I'm not attributing to him a legal analysis. What I'm attributing to him is that he should live with the facts as he created them. He did the corporate paperwork.
Well,
he took this action.
The facts you're attributing to him are legal terms of art. When he says they couldn't transfer their shares, he's, according to you, making a legal admission that they didn't have the ability to transfer their shares.
Your Honor, I think what he's doing is he's making a legal admission that he was not transferring anything on August 23, 2005. He didn't think BVI had the authority to transfer. He was clearly canceling on August 23, 2005, as he's admitted throughout the record and as the Chancery Court found.
Well, if instead of canceling, he was attempting to transfer, how would it be? What difference would there have been in what took place?
Under the facts of this case, I think no difference in the outcome because of what we've discussed in terms of the transfer being ineffective as a matter of law. But had this been an actual transfer, and had that been what he tried to attempt, and had it been with authority, then that would have been something that possibly could have happened.
No, what I'm trying to get at is the actual steps, the physical changes that would be made. Would BVI's shares be marked canceled by the corporation if BVI were transferring its shares to other stockholders, to other parties to become stockholders? Would BVI's shares be marked canceled? And then would new shares be issued in the name of the new owners in an equivalent amount?
I think that it would. I think that, it could. What would happen is BVI, not Mr. Reddy, would show up and say, here's our stock certificate. Mr. Reddy would take that certificate, would take some corporate action to cancel it. He would then issue new certificates with a proper endorsement and delivery and with a proper recording of that transfer on the books and records of the corporation, which I might add never took place in this case. And so in that respect, it would look like that, which is very different from what this case looks like. None of those things actually happened here.
And just to be clear, if that process took place the way you've just described it, that certainly would not require an amendment to the certificate of incorporation, correct?
That is correct. We do not. That is not our position. That's correct.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I just have one question before you start.
Certainly.
You're focusing on a transfer. Your opponent's focusing on a cancellation. Do you agree that if a cancellation took place, a charter amendment would be required?
Yes. If there is a cancellation of stock, I cannot dispute that 242 requires a charter amendment. And then I will follow with what I think you anticipate, which is we do not, in fact, believe that there's cancellation. And that goes to one issue that I'd like to raise very quickly, which is I think that plaintiffs and third-party defendants counsel spent quite a bit of time focusing on credibility issues, which are not appropriate here on appeal at summary judgment, and indicating what I believe they were trying to say, which is that Mr. Reddy characterized this as a cancellation of stock. Mr. Reddy never said that he canceled stock. He canceled BVI shares, and he transferred the ownership interest. He canceled BVI's ownership interest, and when you take all of the totality of the facts and the reasonable inferences in Mr. Reddy's favor, what happened here was a transfer, and to the extent that there is a dispute, that's a dispute of fact.
Right. But as I understand it, there's no dispute about what documents were or were not produced and on what authority in terms of what whether the corporation took action that effectuated anything, whether it was called a cancellation or a transfer. As I understand the record, it wasn't done correctly. Do you dispute that?
I do not dispute. I do not believe that there is a dispute about the documents that have been that are in the record reflecting what occurred here. I think it's the interpretation of those documents. Plaintiffs focus on the technicalities or the mechanics, as I believe Justice Jacobs described it, of how the transfer occurred. But
weren't those technicalities, not in compliance with the requirements of corporate law in terms of how a corporation reissues or transfers or whatever you want to call it, the stock?
Well, I think that if you look at the transfer statute, which I do not read as being a mandatory statute, and look at what occurred here and the intent of BVI in entering into this contract and what BVI intended, it is correct. I cannot dispute there was not endorsement, for example, but I do not believe that that invalidates the transfer that occurred pursuant to this contract that we have to assume exists and pursuant to the intent that BVI expressed by entering into this contract.
So you're saying that the new stock was properly listed on the books and records of the corporation?
It was not listed on the books and records of the corporation.
So isn't that another technicality that didn't get accomplished here?
It is indeed, but registration is not required in order for a transfer to be affected, and registration certainly could be accomplished.
What is required? It doesn't sound as though anything is required if your position is correct.
May I continue to answer? I see that my time is running out very rapidly here. I believe that what is required is there are a couple of answers. If you're following the technical requirements of the statute, those are set forth, and as plaintiffs argue, the endorsement and delivery requirements. But what we have here is a contract that pursuant to which this transfer was supposed to occur. And those endorsement and delivery requirements, those mechanics of transfer can, in fact, be waived. They are there for the protection of the issuing corporation and certain instances for the protection of the shareholder. And if you look at the circumstances here, those protections, they can, in fact, be waived. And the need for those protections is not
endorsement and delivery is all that's required.
Well, I think there has to be the intent to transfer, but that can certainly be shown through endorsement and delivery. In this instance, we have the contract that was governing.
Well, I think the concern the court obviously has in its questions and what we see in the vice chancellor's opinion is that if you're going to set up a corporation, you need to act like a corporation. Sometimes you have to cross T's and dot I's. And one way to read the vice chancellor's opinion is, I'm assuming you had this agreement. However, under the corporation law of the state of Delaware, if you want to do what you said you did, there were certain things that weren't done that make this ineffective. Therefore, if you wanted to implement the agreement this way, you were unsuccessful. However, having said that, there are other ways you can enforce your 1996 agreement, and you're free to pursue them. So the question we have before you sit down is, why was the vice chancellor wrong in saying that you didn't follow the required formalities?
Well, I have two ways that I'd like to answer that, if I may. First, the vice chancellor, I believe, was wrong in saying we didn't follow the required formalities because I believe that statement, if my recollection of the opinion is correct, went to the 242 requirement. And I think I've addressed why I believe that 242 does not apply here and why that is incorrect. with respect to the transfer issue, which I think would be the second prong of it, and the requirements under transfer, the Court of Chancery did not address that at all. It was never raised below. It was not considered or argued by anybody. But I think here we need to consider that we are on summary judgment, that the reasonable inferences are to be made in favor of Mr. Reddy, that there was the 96 agreement that the court assumed existed, pursuant to which this transfer occurred, and that those technical requirements under the transfer statute can, in fact, be waived, and that the protections, the reason for their protections, are not overriding reasons here that would invalidate that transfer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both. The court appreciates your arguments. We'll take the matter under advisement, and we'll also take a brief recess.